Welcome to Tough Talk with Mike Sawyer and Oliver Kopp.
You guys rock!
Woo! MMA Radio, the way you like it. This is Tough Talk.
Welcome back to Tough Talk. It is Sunday evening, and just within a few days, we will have not just one, but two shows up. First, the WEC show with our favorite Takeya Mizugaki in the main event. And then UFC 122 back here in Germany with Marquardt and Ogami battling it out for the top contendership spot. And we'll be joined later on by Marshall Zelaznik, president of the UFC's UK division. I'm Oliver Kopp, and joining me on the line right now is straight from Las Vegas, Mr. Mike Sawyer. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. It's going to be good to get Marshall back on. It's been, a couple of years?
It's been 2 years and a couple of months, actually. He was on back in September of 2008. So he was actually one of the bigger guests at the time.
And he still is.
He's a superstar. I mean,
he is a superstar.
Marshall has become a celebrity in his own right in the UK.
I believe it.
It's amazing how many people went for his autograph in London.
Well, I believe it. He was a very good guest last time, and I don't expect anything less. As you said, we got two big shows coming up this week, buddy.
Yeah. You know what? I really screwed up on the first one, though, because until you mentioned WEC was coming up, I didn't even really have it on my radar here, because I'm totally into UFC 122 mode right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm walking with blinders. I don't see anything left of my head and right of my head. I just see straight ahead to UFC 122. But apparently the WEC show is going to be a big one because Uriah Faber again is fighting.
Yes, he is, and it makes its way back to the Palms here in Las Vegas, one of my favorite venues. Anytime I ever apply for credentials and get them, it's always at the Palms.
Well, so, again, WEC is also great because Dave Scholler's running things.
Yes.
WEC's main media guy, and he's a great dude, seriously.
Yes, and always looking forward. The WEC never lets us down, and I expect another fun show. Is this show called Team Alpha Male?
It just as well might be.
It very well may be. I think the top three fights are all from that camp.
So let's get right in there.
Yeah, start it up.
Now, again, Uriah Faber against Takeya Mizugaki, that's a really, really good fight in my opinion. Faber obviously needs a win bad big time, and with a win against Mizugaki, he would be poised to really take over as a star once the UFC and WEC merge once again. I really want to see him have a second wind of sorts. I really want to see Uriah Faber become a big household name and become a big star because he really deserves it. What do you think?
Well, I agree, and I think the UFC feels exactly the same way you do. Faber, the face of the WEC for a while now, he is 2-3 over his last five. You remember the last fight where he was destroyed by Jose Aldo? And Mike Brown proved to be, you know, a nightmare matchup for him. He needs a win badly here over a guy who's 2-2 with all four fights going to a decision, by the way, which is scary considering that 11 of his 19 fights have also gone the distance. So hoping for a stoppage here and looking for a stoppage here by Uriah Faber and get him back on track.
You know, the funny thing is Mizugaki is like the 135-pound version of Yushin Okami. He's one of those guys who just doesn't tire. He keeps fighting and fighting and fighting, whether it's two rounds, three rounds, five rounds. He just keeps going. He's like the Energizer Bunny. But again, Uriah Faber, you can see the same thing about. Had a five-rounder with Jose Aldo, had a five-rounder against Mike Brown. So he really knows how to pack him in. He really knows how to keep going for a long time. So this could go the distance. It could, but it could also end prematurely. And my money is on Uriah Faber here.
Yeah, me too. You got to go with Uriah. Let's hope that he gets back on track here. He deserves it. It'll be heading in for the 2011 in UFC. But Mizugaki's a tough dude.
He is, definitely.
Very good comparison with Okami.
He's one of those spoilers, you know?
He really is. I was at the last WEC show at the Palms, and I can tell you that the chicks dig the Team Alpha Male. They will be over huge. Faber, a big star, obviously in his home state, but now here in Vegas as well, so... definitely looking forward to this main event.
So what do you think about Joseph Benavidez and Wagner Fabiano?
You know what? It should be a good one too. I mean, Joe's coming off the thrilling loss to Dominic Cruz and a thrilling submission victory over Miguel Torres. Very exciting guy to watch. at that last show, man, he was over. He doesn't stop. You want to talk about the Energizer Bunny, and even shorter than the Energizer Bunny, by the way. You know, and Fabiano is coming off a couple of wins. He's 4-1 in the WEC. Dangerous on the ground. I think he's a third degree black belt. If he can get the fight down there, he has a chance. But Joe Benavidez has looked good in his last two fights, and anytime you can get a submission victory over Miguel Torres, you've definitely done something.
Look, he's another one of those 135 pounders just can go and go and go and go. And I got to tell you, that split decision over Dominic Cruz where he lost the fight, it was really heart-wrenching because it was so close, really. It could have gone either way. So for him, it probably feels like a bad loss because he was so close to winning that fight, and it probably soured a little bit his win on over Miguel Torres. If he had gone into this fight with wins against Dominic Cruz and Miguel Torres, he'd probably be in a much better place right now. But again, give him two or three more wins, and he's going to be right back in the mix.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned the Energizer Bunny. He's a fun guy to watch. And, you know, this should be – these top two fights are going to be very, very, very good. And what do we got coming up here for the next one? Are we going to continue with Team Alpha Male?
Yeah, just go ahead, brother.
What do we got here? Chad Mendez is fighting, who comes in at a perfect 8-0, using his wrestling. He's only 25 years old, and we mentioned the Team Alpha Male, the top three spots, all going to the same camp here. And with Vasquez, second-degree black belt. This guy's got 19 fights. He's never been finished. And this is another one. We talked about this last fight with Benavidez. Where jiu-jitsu guy is going to need to get the fight to the ground to win, especially here as he's never knocked anybody out in any of his fights. So he's going to have to get this fight to the ground for sure. But this should be a fun fight.
You know what? This is actually the one I really have a gut feeling about going to Vasquez instead of Chad Mendes. It's just one of those things. I think Vasquez really matches up well against Chad Mendes. I think Vasquez's strengths very well playing to Chad Mendes' weaknesses. So this is definitely going to be a very, very good fight. It's going to be an interesting fight. I think that this one could be the upset of the night, really.
Really? You're going with the Vasquez?
I'm going to go with Vasquez in this one. You know how I'm about picking fights.
Yeah, but you've been winning lately.
Yeah, well, of course, if you're going to ignore the Brock and Cain Velasquez fight.
Well, yeah, that is true. That is true. But I know what your system is. Your system's very tricky because you'll come on here and we'll do a five-fight preview and you'll pick your five guys and then you bet against yourself on all the five fights. So either way, you're a winner. And then I know the strategy. I know what you're up to, man.
All right. So you can look at it as glass half full, glass half empty, because if you're going to be a winner, you're also going to be a loser if you pick both sides.
That is true. That is true. But this is good. This is just going to be a fun show. I may be going up there for the website. I'm not sure yet. I haven't made up my mind. I'm going to take those couple days off. Our boy Jeremy Botter's in town.
Well, you should get together. You should get together. He's a good guy.
Oh, well, Jeremy.
One of my favorite people to hang out with. Got to tell you.
Yeah, no. I've always get along good with Jeremy, and it was his birthday. So happy birthday to Jeremy. Which Jeremy, about 38?
Nah, he just barely hit 30 now. He's just, I think, 32.
Sorry.
Dude, not everybody's as old as you are.
Oh, how dare you. just you.
You know what? You probably still have a couple of years on me, so I'll be good.
I do. And I made that thread up for your birthday.
Yeah.
I know sometime back, but I will be 40 next year.
So what about your buddy Anthony Njokuani?
I saw him three times this week.
Okay.
Getting him ready with some supplements in the store, obviously. And he looks good. I think he was at he's almost at weight.
Okay.
Already, and this was last week, so he's looking good. He's still training up at One Kicks Gym, and he's training with Sergio Pena. I believe his brother had a fight last night. I didn't get the results for, but he's definitely in good spirits. It should be fun.
Well, he does need to win badly, though. He really needs it. Two losses back to back.
Yes.
Fighting a guy who's 2-0, so he better get a win.
Yeah. I think Nick is working on his movement a little bit better, a little side to side with this guy. So. But he's in good spirits. He's definitely a lot more relaxed than I've seen him. So we'll see how that translates, into fight night. But a lot of work with one kick. One kick's gaining some people over there. I know they were talking with Vitor Belfort about possibly coming over there. But, yeah, I'm going to see if that works out. And, of course, Stefan Bonner's been over there, and Steve Cantwell's over there. And I hear that they're having some hell of a sparring sessions between those two.
Well, one kick had a hell of a time over here in London.
You got to see him, huh?
Oh, Jesus. That guy was all over the place. He really had a great time because he didn't have anybody in the corner. You know, since
that is true, since Steve got hurt.
Exactly. So yeah. He came over and had a good time over in London, which is never a bad thing.
Nick always has a good time.
Yeah.
Just with Nick, you don't know it.
True.
You know? You never know it,
always
Nick.
Looks kind of miserable.
He's, as I say, you know, people, they'll say, man, you know, Nick's kind of strange. But, you know, Nick is one of those guys that he's not really strange. He's just kind of sizing you up.
Right.
Even if you're just having a one-on-one conversation with him, he's always kind of looking at you sideways like, you know, I could fuck you up three or four ways right now. I'm just deciding which one I want to do.
Right. Well, he comes off as a very quiet, very private guy.
He is. Like I said, I worked with him at the strip club for a while. So.
Right.
Nick's a good guy, and the guys love him over there, and they do their nightly sessions with him, and they do the morning sessions with another very respected guy in Sergio Pena.
Well, Sergio Pena is also one of those guys who everybody talks well about. Mm-hmm. You're not going to find anybody who's going to say a bad thing about Sergio Pena, because he's not one of those attention whores like certain guys from Los Angeles who are going to try to get themselves over more than the fighters they're actually coaching. But he's just
or Vegas.
Well, there's a couple of those too, but I'm thinking of somebody very particular there. What I'm saying is he's one of those guys who stays in the background and who lets his fighters do the talking.
Very, very true. Very true. Both of the guys, Nick too.
Yeah.
Nick too.
Well, he probably has a rap sheet of him all along, so he probably should be quiet.
Yeah. Nick does stay in the background. I always use the thing with Nick is when he came to Scores. That 4 o'clock in the morning till 12 shift in the afternoon was always the worst.
Okay.
Because it was when everybody's drunk and and everybody's rambunctious, and that's when all the fights would take place. And I worked that shift for a little bit until I got put on nights. And when Nick showed up, Nick was managing that shift, and they would have four security with Nick.
Really?
So you had a 5-man crew. Okay. By the time Nick got there after 2 weeks, it was Nick by himself. You didn't need any security. You didn't need any backup. You had Nick.
See, the thing is, most people in Vegas respect Nick greatly. I mean, fighters aren't going to start shit there. And if patrons get rowdy, look, he's got their number.
Well, not only that, everybody knows him.
Right.
And for those who don't know him, because if you look at Nick, you kind of like, that's one kick? You know, you kind of see this older guy. I mean, he's in shape, but he's not a big muscle guy. And, you know, he's kind of lanky, long and lanky. He's very quiet. You would never know that he could kill you. Bare hands. So I've seen a few instances with Nick, and, yeah, Nick does very well.
Speaking of Vegas guys, though, what's up with Big Country? I mean, some of those things he's written on Twitter and Facebook, those could have been written by Matt Hardy.
I'm not sure exactly what's going on with him. You know, he likes to have a lot of fun, and I notice he sends Dana pretty much every tweet.
Right.
You know, he's constantly picking and jabbing away at him.
I'm just not sure whether that's smart, really.
I don't think he cares.
Okay.
I agree with what you're saying. I don't think Roy cares. I think the thing with him is I think he's so playful, and he likes to joke around that if you don't take him that way, you know what I mean? He comes across – you know what I'm trying to say.
I know.
If you don't know – you know, he's just a playful guy. He's kind of shy, playful, but he keeps it up. And then he went on MMA Live, and they asked him who you want to fight. And he says, well, you know, I'm open to fighting Brock Lesnar, but I'll fight The Undertaker too. You know, it just little things. And then I read the one interview that he did, and they says, well, you know, who would you like to fight? And I see he mentions Alistair Overeem, and I'm thinking to myself – stop.
Mm-hmm.
Stop with those comments, or you might be over there soon. You might have an opportunity.
Be careful what you wish for, right?
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, but who knows with him? That's just the way he is. I don't know. I mean, people are talking about Lesnar, and they're talking about different things. We'll see what happens. What do you think is going to happen with him?
Yeah, I just hope he's in a good place right now, because from his tweets over the last couple of weeks, I got the feeling that he might be a bit frustrated about not being able to come back right away.
Well, I think he's frustrated because he probably looks at it like this. He went and had the knee surgery. He gets called 2 or 3 days after the knee surgery and says, "We want you to do Carwin, have a fight with him on the first of the year. It's on short notice. His doctors advise him against it, but Roy takes the fight anyway, so Roy starts the rehab early, and then the fight is yanked, and as he's rehabbing and getting ready, then they don't give him a fight. So now he's kind of sitting back going, you know, I put myself at risk here coming back early, and I've started my training, and now I'm not even fighting. So probably a little frustration.
Okay.
Some guys handle it a little different than others.
Right.
Some guys talk about it a little different than others, and Roy is Roy.
That's
what you're going to get with him.
What you see is what you get.
What you see is what you get with him, and hopefully he can control himself a little bit and stick around, and we can maybe see the Lesnar fight at some point.
I would give my left nut to see Roy and Lesnar. That's the one fight I really want to see.
I would very much like to see that fight, but I'd like to see the Frank Mir fight too. I just want to see Roy fight. I'll take a Carwin fight when he's healthy and feeling better.
Right.
I understand he's not doing so well right now.
Well, I'm actually questioning whether or not Carwin's going to be back at all. You know, he's 34 now. He's looking at a 6-month rehab package after his back surgery. And the thing is, once you had that kind of surgery, you're never going to be the same. That's the thing.
Tito
had a similar back surgery. Tito's been a shell of his former self. You just don't come back at 100% from that sort of surgery. Plus, again, and people always tend to forget this, Shane Carwin today is older than Tito Ortiz ever was when he fought competitively and had his surgeries.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're looking at Carwin coming back at age 35, or maybe even if things don't go right, actually nearing age 36. The big question to me is he ever going to be back? And if he's going to be back, is he going to be back in the same form we saw him in the Lesnar fight? You know, is he going to be as dangerous? Is he going to be as much of a threat?
Well, you mentioned Twitter, and then I saw his tweets in the last couple of days where he's very sick, sick from the medication, from the pain pills and everything he's taking. He said pretty soon he could be fighting a flyweight. He's never been this sick, so, you know, not good times for him. So we wish him well. I know I joke with Botter about him all the time, but, you know, Shane seems like a nice guy. I definitely want to see him back in the cage.
Well, hope he gets well soon then.
Yes. Speaking of soon, you got to be very excited about this Saturday, my friend.
I am. Look.
How is your week? Give us a little backdrop for what Oliver Kopp's week is going to be like.
It's not going to be that exciting, brother. I'm going to
get
over there Wednesday evening. I'm just going to have to miss the open workouts, unfortunately. I have some work thing here, which I can't get out of. So I'm going to be doing the press conference on Thursday, the weigh-ins on Friday, and then it's basically fight time.
Yes, it is.
There's going to be a UFC Fight Club party at Central Shopping Center on Friday, and Stitch is going to be there, by the way.
Oh,
he's going to be basically selling and personalizing his autobiography. And the funny thing is, he had this idea where everybody who gets the autobiography there is going to be entered into a drawing. He draws one person, and then he's going to wrap them, sign the wrap, cut it open for them to take home as a souvenir, which is pretty cool. It's a money can't buy thing. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be a pretty good party, and a lot of people are going to be very happy about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We love Stitch. That's going to be – I think he did the boxing show last night, I believe.
You know what? Stitch is all over the place still.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys. He just can't slow down.
No. And everybody loves him. Everybody loves Stitch.
He's so personable. I mean, there's nobody who's going to say anything bad about the man.
No.
He's like Mark Ratner in a way. You know, Mark Ratner was involved in boxing for almost 30 years now. Boxing people are all over each other, at each other's throats. Everybody hates everybody. But I've yet to speak to one person in boxing or in any other sport who's ever come into contact with Mark Ratner and doesn't have a very high opinion of him. And Stitch is in the same boat.
Yeah, that's a good comparison there. Two good guys, that's for sure. Let's talk about this card a little bit here. You know, this is one of those shows that on paper may not exactly tear the house down, but these are usually the shows that do. So let's get into this a little bit. Talk about this main event with Yushin Okami and Nate Marquardt. What are you expecting?
You know, it's actually a good question, good fight, because Marquardt's been in title eliminators before. He lost to Chael Sonnen. He lost to Talos Latus. So he's going to be extra motivated to get it right this time around. As they say often, third time's a charm. I hope it's going to be for Marquardt, because otherwise he might end up as being the ultimate gatekeeper if he can't get past Okami now. Personally, I would like to see Okami fight against Anderson Silva more than Marquardt against Anderson Silva, just because it's a fresh fight in the UFC and Marquardt's been there with Anderson. Personally, I would definitely want to see Yushin Okami get rewarded for being in there before. He had his title shot knocked down when he got injured. He should have got the title shot. Now he's going to have to qualify again. Marquardt, on the other hand, had his title shot against Anderson Silva, fell short. So if he gets back in there, if he beats Okami, he gets back at Anderson Silva. Obviously, both guys have changed over the years. It's probably going to be a different fight. I'm just not sure whether or not Marquardt's going to be able to take it to Anderson Silva the way Okami might be able to take it to him.
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing, Nate's coming off that TKO win over our boy Paul Harris back at the fight night, and he's 4-1. He can't forget the punch on Damian Maia, beat Campman, beat Gouveia, and he's finished all of them by knockout or KO.
True.
Dangerous, dangerous guy wherever the fight ends up. He's really only lost the two big fights that he's had against the better competition was Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen. He was beat by both of them. Now, he lost to Talos Latus. That really didn't count. I think he had a couple points deducted in that fight.
Nice pile driver, by the way.
Yeah, that was a beautiful pile driver. Okami is 5-1, another guy who's lost to Chael. Nice win over Munoz, and he had a win over McDonald, I think, and Dean Lister, and the great Evan Tanner. He quietly wins, and he's excellent in all areas. He showed a fantastic sprawl in the last fight with Munoz. This is a battle of two very good fighters who have only really lost to the best. And now one of these guys is going to have to step up and take this number one contender spot and advance for the opportunity to finish the job and to reach the very top and to achieve that number one status. You mentioned Marquardt with Anderson Silva. We've saw that fight. Nate lost. Okami has a win, be it by DQ, but has a win over Anderson Silva. So I'm kind of with you on this. It would be nice to see Okami. I mean, they got a little history. This is a guy who actually has a win over Anderson. But it should be an interesting main event nonetheless.
Definitely. And I mean, obviously, even though I'm pulling for Okami, I'm thinking my brain is saying Nate Marquardt. But it said the same thing against Chael Sonnen.
What I was going to say, man. We were both there for that fight.
Right.
And I think we were both so confident that he was going to kick the shit out of Chael, and it just the opposite. And it really, I mean, what a fight that was. And I as much as I agree with you on this, he should win this fight, I can't get that fight out of my head.
Yep. And the question is, can Nate get it out of his head? I mean, both times he's had to step up, he basically shut down.
That's right.
So,
that's right. So who are you taking then?
I'm going to take a gamble. I'm going to go with Okami.
Okay.
He's the underdog, but I think it's just his time to take this one.
Okay. I'm going to go with Nate.
Okay.
I'm going to take Nate in this one, but I'm not really sold on him. I don't let last performance, man. You know, the Paul Harris fight was nice, but I can't get that Chael one out of my head. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Both guys got two up by Chael Sonnen, and so you can say the same thing about Okami. To me, this fight is so close, it's literally a toss-em fight. A pick-em.
But the difference with that is I expected Chael to beat Okami.
Okay.
I didn't expect the Marquardt to get handled like he did. But you're right. You make a good point. We'll see what happens. What do we got up in the semi-main event here?
That's Alessio Sakara and Jorge Rivera. And this fight picked up a lot of steam over the past couple of days with Rivera's Ranger Up video we posted on the internet.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I heard about it, yes.
Basically, what he did is he sang a cappella versions of old 80s cheesy German pop hits, wearing a fake wig and wearing a typical German mustache from back in the day. So It was hilarious. I mean, I can't begin to describe how funny that video is. Guys, look it up on YouTube. I've got it on my Facebook as well. You really, really need to watch that fight. Watch that video because it sells Jorge Rivera better than everything anybody has ever done with him.
Did he copy that stash you had from a few weeks back?
I didn't have a stash. He looked more like Super Mario. Which is funny because he's fighting an Italian guy.
Yeah, well, this is going to be an interesting one, man. I mean, Rivera's won his last three fights. And in the last one, the very impressive performance over Nate Rocquori. This is a battle in my book of the unpredictables. I don't know. It's both guys are unpredictable, man.
You're right in a way, though. I think Rivera is more unpredictable in a good way, and Sakara is more unpredictable in a bad way. Like, every time you think Sakara is going to have a definite win, he gets handled badly. And then when you don't expect him to win, he wins. Whereas Rivera just sometimes when he goes into a fight where you just can't picture any way he's going to take the fight, he's going to win the fight, he just does. Like when he handled Kendall Grove over in England, nobody saw that coming, and it was just one of the best moments ever.
Well, and he'll come out and bang. He'll come forward. There's going to be no dump and hump. He's going to come out and bang. And let's talk about Sakara for a second, too. Sakara quietly comes in on a three-fight win streak as well. I mean, he's got the wins over James Irvin. He's beat Talis Latis. His last fight, I believe, he got KO of the night honors. I mean, this should be exciting while it lasts. Both of these guys can be very, very explosive, and both can be humbled in spectacular fashion. But the most important thing is both guys have tremendous heart. So this is going to be an excellent fight. I'm the top two fights. I'm looking forward to this one.
It's really, really, really unpredictable. That's the good thing about it. It could go either way, and you probably can't expect a stand-up war between those two. Sakara obviously is not the best guy on the ground. Jorge likes to stand anyway, so they've been promising a big fight. They've been promising letting their fists fly. This has fight of the night written all over it.
It does. It does, and I don't even want to pick a winner because, like we said, it's unpredictable.
It is.
This could go either way at any time.
Another pick'em fight.
Yeah. Yeah, but a good one.
Yeah.
A good one. Take us to our next fight on this show.
Well, we're looking at Krzysztof Osinski from Poland against Goran Reljic from Croatia. What do you think?
Well, Sosinski's coming off that loss to we talked about One Kick, Nick, the rejuvenated Stefan Bonner, who's training over at One Kick and has done wonders for him. He's 4-2 in the UFC. Watch out for the Kimura. He's finished four of his finishes by submission have come by Kimura. Goran's coming off two losses, one to Grove, the other to Dalloway. He can't afford a third. Okay, or he'll be back to dominating guys on the indie scene. So five of his eight wins have come by submission. This is going to be a fun fight.
Definitely. I mean, the thing about Reljic is he shouldn't have competed at middleweight. It's something he wanted to do. He dropped down from 205. He lost his two fights. He's now back at 205, where he's always been best, and he's never been beaten at 205, by the way. So he's going to be an interesting opponent for Krzysztof. And again, Krzysztof, he's had really good UFC wins so far. He's one of those guys, came from a pro wrestling background, picked up the Kimura from Bad News Brown, of all people, and got so hooked on these quote-unquote shoot holds that he went into MMA. He's one of those guys who really likes to stand and bang, but he's also pretty good on the ground. So this is, again, a fight which is very hard to pick. Krzysztof probably is more well-rounded. Reljic has a lot harder punches, a lot harder kicks. So it's also one of those very close fights. I think experience is gonna best raw power and raw emotion here. I think Krzysztof is gonna take this one.
I'm gonna go with Krzysztof as well. And just looking at with this 122 card, these top three fights, these are all gonna be good.
They are.
They all have the potential to be very, very good. And this could be the sleeper card that actually comes through.
See, it's one of those things. As you mentioned, some fights, some cards have spectacularly big names. Other cards have fights which are too close to pick even when going in. And you could make an argument about every fight on the main card being a very, very close fight and having the potential to be exciting. Look at Amir Sadal and Peter Sabata, for instance. Sabata had two fights in the UFC so far. He lost both by decision. He needs a win. His back is against the wall. He's fighting in front of his home country's fans. So he's going to have their support, but he needs to win. It doesn't matter if he looks good in the fights. It doesn't matter if he shows heart. If he doesn't beat Amir Sadala, he's out of the UFC. And Amir, on the other hand, he's also had a mixed bag since winning the Ultimate Fighter. He's another one of those guys where people say, yeah, well, when it counts, he always freezes. When it counts, he doesn't really get the job done. Now, this is definitely proving ground for both guys. Amir needs a strong win against a good opponent. Peter needs a win in the UFC to stay competitive and stay in the company. So again, both guys are going to go balls to the wall. And that also has the makings of a great fight.
I agree. Peter's coming off the two losses, as you mentioned. I think one was to Taylor. Who was the other one? Was Wilkes?
It was James Wilkes, yeah.
James Wilkes. So he's 0-2. And, and a loss for him here, well, he won't have far to go home.
That's true.
Three-hour
drive, probably.
3-hour drive for him. I mean, he is 8-3, but this is another guy that let's see if he can compete with guys, you know, in the UFC.
Yeah.
And Amir's coming off the loss to the Donger. He's 3-2. He had that beautiful win over my boy Baroni. And he beat CB Dalloway and Blackburn. It's a really big fight for both guys here. And for Amir, a nice win puts him back on track. A loss, and I guess he can improve upon his interview and hosting skills. He's a very likable guy. He's an Ultimate Fighter winner. But you know, that's not going to keep you around unless you're Forrest Griffin or Stephen Bonner.
There you go.
So
I mean, he wouldn't be the first Ultimate Fighter winner to get cut. I don't think a loss to Peter Zabata is going to do him in for the UFC, but it would definitely set him back to the point where he would have his back against the wall for his next fight.
Mm-hmm.
So both guys are going to be extra motivated. They're going to pull out all the stops. The only thing I'm going to say is you never know when two guys really have to win. Sometimes you get boring fights because neither guy wants to take a risk. And sometimes you get exciting fights because both guys pull out all the stops. So it's going to be one or the other. There's probably not much middle ground here.
No, I agree. I agree. And it looks like this card's going to be your boy's fight on here, Dennis.
Dennis is going to be on the card, and he's had a lot of media interest lately, brother.
Yeah, talk about this one for a little bit.
You know, I really don't know where to start with Dennis, because when he came into the UFC, he came in as a welterweight. He was kind of in over his head. He had a 1-3 record. He didn't really do that well. They cut him. And then he decided to go down to lightweight. And ever since coming back as a lightweight and changing up his training, he started to train more technique. He started to train more wrestling. He's doing more MMA-specific training now. He's turned his career around. He had two great knockout wins over Nate Moore and over Paul Kelly with his spinning back kick. He had a good submission win over in Cologne back at last year, UFC 99. The only setback he's had since coming back as a lightweight was against Ultimate Fighter Season 9 winner, Ross Pearson.
Yes.
And that was the decision loss. It wasn't a close decision. I thought he lost all three rounds to Pearson, but he came back with a win over Spencer Fisher. Very, very close fight. Now he's fighting Andre Winner, who lost to Pearson in the Ultimate Fighter finale. Andre still has this incredibly bad fight against Nick Lentz on his mind from last August at UFC 118. So he got shut down by Lentz. Lentz didn't want to engage. Andre's not going to have that problem with Dennis, because Dennis is a former kickboxing champion. He's going to want to engage against Andre Winner. So again, this fight could be a top-level kickboxing fight between two really talented guys.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that. Thing with Dennis, he's coming off the win over Spencer Fisher. He's 4-1 in the UFC. He's finished all of them. You mentioned the kickboxing, well-rounded, very compact, explosive fighter. Expect him to come out very quickly in front of the hometown crowd as well. They're going to be pumped up to see him. Where Andre is 2-2 in the UFC, he's coming off that loss you mentioned to Lentz. I'm expecting Dennis to come out very, very strong and push the pace. It scares me a little bit with Andre that 9 of his last 10 have gone to a decision. Let's hope that this isn't another one of them. Let's hope that Dennis gets in there, shows a little sense of urgency, which I think he will. Let the hometown crowd pump him up. Again, another good fight.
This is going to be a good one, and that's the main card. And when was the last time you had a fight card with Vladimir Matyushenko being in prelim?
Yeah, the janitor.
The janitor is also going to be there. This is going to be a very interesting fight because he's facing Alexander Ferreira in his UFC debut. And just visually, it's going to look somewhat like Stefan Struve and Roy Nelson because Ferreira is really, really short. He's compact. And Vladi is rather tall, somewhat lanky, got a bit of a gut going now, but he's still in top shape. And everybody says if this fight's going to end for Ferreira, Ferreira's going to have to submit him in the first round because otherwise Vladimir's going to wipe the mat with him. That's what people are saying. Even people who are training with Ferreira are saying that, look, either he's got to take it in the first round or he's going to be in trouble. So I'm very excited for this fight.
Yeah, you've always been a big fan of the janitor.
No, look, he's a good guy, and he's got good taste in sandwiches.
Really?
Oh, Jesus. The minute he heard he wasn't going to be fighting Cantwell in Vegas, I saw him at Witchcraft in MGM. So he was having some of the biggest sandwiches known to man.
What were you doing in there?
You know what? I was actually having breakfast with Ant Devins from the UFC.
Good friend from the UK. Good friend,
Who actually turned me on to Witchcraft because I didn't really ever bat an eye when walking by there until he told me, dude, you got to get in there. They have great sandwiches. And you know what? They got great sandwiches. Witchcraft, really? Probably the best sandwiches I've had in Vegas.
And throw that in with our place at the Orleans.
Which has great steak.
Affordable steak, yes.
The Prime Rib Loft at the Orleans Hotel and Casino on West Tropicana in Las Vegas.
There's the plug for them. They deserve it.
They do, actually. You know, I kind of like it because it doesn't have this really ritzy feeling to it, but you get good food at a reasonable price, and it's kind of private still. You know,
and they treat you good.
They do. Really, really nice people there, but I guess we're veering off topic here. There's one more fight I really, really, really look forward to on the undercard, and that's the opener between Pascal Kraus and Mark Scanlon. Because Scanlon, he's from England, he's unbeaten so far, and he's going up against one of Germany's best prospects in the welterweight division, and some people say probably the best welterweight prospect ever to come out of Germany.
Mm.
Pascal is an animal as far as wrestling is concerned. He has great striking. And again, what it comes back to is he's been wrestling since age 15. So he's one of those rare guys in Europe who actually knows how to wrestle. He's actually one of those guys who can grapple. And a lot of the guys, especially coming up in Germany, they know boxing, they know some kickboxing, but grappling isn't exactly their forte. And Pascal is actually the first guy to come into the UFC with a good grappling background from Germany. So I want to see how he stacks up against one of the UFC's guys. Now, Mark, again, he's from England. He's a good guy as well. He's not quite at the level I would have hoped for as a testing stone for Pascal. But if Pascal doesn't get by Mark impressively or gets beaten by Mark, you know that all the wrestling he gets over here in Germany still can't stack up. So it's really this fight's really interesting to see how the level of wrestling over here compares to the rest of the world.
So basically what Oliver is telling you is put your money on Mark. because he has just built him up, Pascal up here. So put your money on Mark, everybody.
Yep. Again, Mark's a great fighter, don't get me wrong. He's unbeaten. He definitely deserves to be in the UFC.
So, yeah.
Again, this is going to be a good fight for either guy who wins.
This is going to be a great show. Again, it's one of those things that when you look at it on paper, it's like, ooh, you know, this is one maybe you can miss. You know what? No. After looking at this, do not miss it.
See, and it's a funny thing because a lot of people were complaining about the fight card over here on the internet forums, as people just always do. But the closer we get to the card, the more people say they're excited for it. The more people discuss the fights in detail, break them down, and say, well, which guy's going to win? And to me, that's the mark of an exciting card at the very least. Maybe not marquee value, but again, it's going to be in the United States. It's going to be on Spike TV. It's not one of those numbered cards in Vegas, and the ticket prices are also lower than they usually are for these numbered events.
Really?
So people are gonna get a good bang for their buck.
What time does this show start?
In Germany, first fight is at 6:20 p.m. It goes live. It goes live at 9 p.m. German time, 8 p.m. UK time, and 3 p.m. East Coast, noon Pacific.
Nice.
However,
this is gonna be fun.
Exactly. The Spike broadcast, I think, starts at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And Pacific?
Well,
I'm sure.
Either it's going to be 6 p.m., but I'm not sure if they have a staggered feed.
Yeah, probably be 9 o'clock here.
So I don't really know.
That's okay. Between Thursday and Saturday, we got some good fights coming up here.
And honestly, I'm really pumped about this card. I really am. I'm happy for Mark Ward and Okami fighting because I legitimately think those are the top two guys who should be fighting for the title shot. I personally don't think Vitor Belfort should be anywhere near a title shot at middleweight. Of course, he's going to get one, but that's a different. It has different reasons.
He hasn't fought anyone.
Exactly. It doesn't mean he can't win against Anderson Silva, but you know, obviously you got to give a legend some cut him some slack. Randy Couture came back after getting knocked out twice by Chuck, went back in a different weight class and got a title shot immediately. I can't criticize somebody for giving Vitor one after the same basic path there, but it just doesn't feel right to say see Vitor against Anderson. Plus, I don't think he means anything in the United States.
Yeah, he doesn't. I'm gonna wait to criticize him after the fight.
Right.
Just in case he catches him.
Right. I mean, again, it could be a very, very exciting fight. Whenever Vitor was supposed to be on, it always felt like either he pulled out of the fight before the fight, like a couple weeks before, or he mentally shut down. I've rarely seen him win a big fight where he really had to win. The fights he's won are the ones where you say, yeah, he has a good chance, but he's not the favorite. You know, like the one against Lundland.
Yeah.
Those are the ones exactly. He wins spectacularly. Or even against Rich Franklin, though Rich was injured going into the fight, probably shouldn't have even taken the fight. But the point is, whenever the heat's been on, Vitor hasn't really come through. And I fear that the same's going to happen again against Anderson. That's why I don't want to see him in there. But hey, I'm not making the matches here.
Well, we'll see what happens with that. And of course, even when this is all done, we still got Machida and Rampage.
Now that's going to be big.
So we've got just a ton of stuff going on here in the next 2 weeks, starting with Thursday and then Saturday and then the following Saturday. So excellent 10, 14 days if you're an MMA fan.
That's definitely going to be a good time for every MMA fan. And again, watch WEC second to last broadcast on its own before the fighters get integrated into the UFC in the beginning of the year. Something I'm, again, very excited about. I really want to see those guys on a UFC card.
Well, we're going to. We're going to see Jose Aldo on the first. You know, so this is outstanding. It's a fun time to be a fan. And like I said, this is going to be great.
And now I guess we should get on Marshall Zelaznik from the UFC to talk about UFC 122 because he always has interesting stuff to say. And I hope he can shed some light on the entire development over here in Germany.
Let's do it.
He's the president of UFC's UK division, which apparently also encompasses all of Europe, the Middle East, and Asia right now. So it seems like not only are his responsibility expanding, but also the UK seems to be expanding. Please welcome back to Tough Talk, Mr. Marshall Zelaznik. How are you?
I'm good. I think my waist is expanding as well, so I'm consistent.
Did you have a good time in Vegas?
I did. You know, it was a 2-day whirlwind trip. They all seem to be that way. It's not my line, but I'm starting to get the body built by United.
So I hope you're at least getting the good filet mignon. Your flight's over.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm getting, something like that.
You got it. Now, you've been flying all over the world lately. You just got back from Vegas. You're going to have a cup of coffee in London. Now you're going to head to Germany, what, tomorrow? Tuesday?
Yeah, I'll head probably Tuesday. That's what it's looking most like.
So does all the flying ever get old?
You know, it does. It sounds, you know, really sexy to be able to travel around and, you know, but as soon as you've been through one security line, waited too long for a bag, you know, had a problem getting a boarding pass, you know, if you have to experience that a few times a month, it gets old pretty quick.
Now, it's been like two years and 3 months now since we've last had you on, and those two years have been pretty wild ones, to be honest. What a lot of people don't know is that you and your team were responsible for not just the events in Europe, but also the ones in Sydney and Abu Dhabi. Could you please talk a bit about the entire process that goes into going into new territory?
Yeah, sure. You know, the thing that we do out of the UK office is, as most people probably know, is we try to launch our television product everywhere in the world. And so because we're at the forefront out of that office and doing all of the worldwide TV deals, We have a pretty good sense of what's happening in each of those individual markets. You know, we track a lot of the data points. And so as soon as we start to think that it's time for an event, our group, which, you know, they basically have daytime and night jobs, you know, their daytime job is managing all the international business. And then at nighttime, when we have to do an event, we all become event operations people. So once we identify a city where we want to have an event, then we all go into our event mode where we're looking for hotels, looking for venues, looking, you know, for the right PR agencies if we haven't already hired them, and all of those steps that come with planning an event. So once we've identified a city, we go into overdrive and start getting to work on that.
Let's go from overdrive to Oberhausen real quick. Obviously, with one UFC 122 coming up, that's been one of your focal points lately. Let's sum up what happened over the last couple of months. Now, Germany's national sports station DSF began broadcasting UFC in March 2009. UFC 99 was a huge success, both as a live event as well as a television special. Then we had Ultimate Fighter 10. It also saw its audience grow week by week, and UFC programming was on an excellent course as of early 2010. And then the Bavaria Commercial Media Authority, BLM, basically pulled UFC programming almost overnight. What was your initial reaction when you got word about it?
Well, you know, I think initially it was just the thought that, okay, there's somebody or some group who's misinformed about the UFC. We've, you know, confronted that a few times in our growth. And so there wasn't an initial concern that, oh boy, this is really going to happen. We're going to be off air. We really thought that, you know, there was just a meeting or two to take place to be able to give them the real information and, you know, go on about our business, because, you know, a reasonable open-mindedness, you know, with the facts that, you know, surround the sport in the UFC usually prevail. But it seems that what we learned, however, in the weeks following the initial contact we received, was that the BLM didn't really have any thought of having any fair, open discussion about the issue. They were intent on following through with their decision without consideration of the real facts. But nevertheless, you know, we held out hope then, and we hold out hope now that we'll get this all resolved.
So let me get this straight. You've been on TV for a good year with nothing as much as a peep from the regulators, and then they just took the UFC off the air like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's even worse than that. You know, these regulators actually gave approval. They reviewed DVDs of the product with, you know, probably 6 months before we actually were on air, perhaps a little bit longer, and approved the program to air on DSF. They did have some restrictions about when it could air, so that would air after a certain hour. And ultimately what happened is somebody within this group didn't like it. You know, there are a lot of rumors about, you know, the political pressure that's being exerted on this group amongst a varying number of groups within the entire country of Germany. We don't know how true any of that is, but nevertheless, they had approved it, and you're absolutely right. We got a notice one day without any warning that they were making the decision to withdraw that approval.
How is that even possible? I mean, isn't this a slam dunk for you guys legally?
It would seem to be. You know, I think that the biggest frustration, you know, I was a lawyer for 11 years. I guess you never stop being a lawyer. And Germany's a democracy, and the U.S. is a democracy. And I'm used to a certain procedure and a certain process, and expect that once the information gets in the hands of the decision makers, that there's really only one conclusion. And that process and procedure that I think I'm used to, and, you know, most Americans who learn anything about sort of civil justice have some expectation of, it just didn't happen in this case. There seemed to be such a political push. I mean, the best example is when we were first filing our first lawsuit, we actually prevailed at the preliminary injunction stage, only to find out that an appeal was filed and the court had reviewed, without any comment from us, DVDs and other information supplied by this licensing authority, and then made their decision. And if due process is a term you're familiar with, it certainly feels like in this process we haven't gotten our due process.
Jesus, Oliver, I got to tell you, man, you lived in a pretty messed up country. You know what? Sorry to say.
Dude, I can't even begin to wrap my head around this. When you get a program certified by ratings commission over here, that rating is binding unless the program changes substantially. None of this applied in the case of UFC's programming. It's been essentially unchanged for the past 7 to 8 years. So in my opinion, I have no, there's no basis to take this off the air. I'm actually shocked. And Marshall, I'm sorry. Yes, we are a democracy, but this is not democratic. I'm shocked at this sort of behavior. And I can only say that I have no earthly idea how you can even begin to defend it.
Yeah, look, as frustrating as this has been, it's been a great learning experience. And I said, we've got great lawyers. We've got great people supporting us in country. I'm still optimistic that we're going to get this all resolved. I have, my thoughts of due process and procedure have certainly been challenged. But having said all that, I love to go and visit Germany. I've enjoyed going to Berlin. We are in the process of meeting with key members of parliament, and we're making real progress with the politicians there. This event is going to be a big success. We've already started changing the thought, I believe, of a lot of the key media outlets. So this is just part of the process. We're going to get through this, but certainly our notions of fair play and justice are a little challenged right now.
I do have to say, though, despite all the politics involved right now on the television front, UFC 122 is shaping up to become another big success story for the UFC over here. What went into the decision-making process to come back to Germany without television?
Well, part of it is, if you're not in a country, the live event is so key for us, and I use this phrase, it's becoming cliche in my mind, but to have a voice in the country, you almost need to have the event. I mean, you can be on with television, hire your PR agencies, and try to motivate media and the discussion about the UFC with that. But the best way is always to have an event. So when we were taking off television with DSF and we sat around the table talking about what our next move is, to every man and woman in the discussion, it was, we need to be back with an event. We needed to continue to have our voice. The idea of going back, year after year with events is something we've discussed, because we've got to create some normalcy and understanding in the country. And if we weren't to come back with an event until we resolve this legal issue, the concern is that, you end up having to peel that scab every time, and it never really heals. And so the idea is to continue to keep going back with an event, and UFC 122 was the right time for us to do that. The officials within Oberhausen, the arena executives, actually came to us wanting the event. They had come to the event in Cologne. So we had good partners who were going to stand beside us, and we thought, all right, well, if this turns into another, media fight, we have good partners to move ahead. So it was those kind of things that went into the process.
The König Pilsen Arena in Oberhausen is actually one of the nicest arenas in all of Germany, and the way it's structured makes it perfect for taping sports that take place in the ring or in a cage. I remember there being some commotion in the local government and local media last year before UFC 99 in Cologne. Yet this year, the media's reaction has been a lot more positive and a lot more well-informed. Is it fair to say that many journalists realized after UFC 99 that they had been complaining about things that aren't even part of the UFC today?
Yeah, I think so. I think what we did, and not many people know this, but when we were in the fight leading into Cologne, I think we sent out somewhere between 20 and 30 cease and desist letters to the various media outlets who were reporting erroneous or false facts, things like no gloves, fight to the death, no rules, no weight classes, things like that. So we sent out letters advising them of the real facts and, basically said, if you don't agree that you've misstated the facts, we will sue you. And every one of those agencies sent back a declaration admitting that, yes, they had stated the false facts and they promised to never do it again. And so I think what we're seeing is an education which occurred after Cologne. I think the sensationalism around the UFC that we faced the last time, people realized that this isn't as sensational a story as it is from the red top paper perspective. So, this is all part of the process, and that's, again, why these events are important, and you've characterized it correctly, Oliver. I mean, the coverage this time, while there hasn't been as much media coverage in the last event, the coverage we've gotten has been neutral to fair, which is all we can ask.
Now, it's my understanding from various reports in the media that the government of Oberhausen is actually very happy for UFC to be coming back to the city. How was their initial reaction when the subject of bringing a UFC event to the city was broached?
Well, Oberhausen is a city that lies within the state of North Rhine-Westphalia. And North Rhine-Westphalia, when we were going through the process in Cologne, that state had approved the event. And so when we did the Cologne event, local city officials and arena officials came to the Cologne event. We had discussions with them both before and after the event. And as soon as the event was over, they said to us, when can you bring it to Oberhausen? So they have been very supportive through the entire process. You know, we had been in contact with them before we went on sale with tickets, making sure that we were prepared in the event that there was a media storm around it. So it obviously never came to fruition that we had to deal with that. But they've been very positive, very supportive, and I have no doubt that after the event they'll be asking when we can come back.
I can only say this from an outside looking in, but I imagine it's pretty difficult trying to operate in a country where you don't speak the language and where there will always be a cultural disconnect between you and what you're used to in local customs. How difficult is it really to cope with these things?
It's difficult in some ways, but you know, as soon as you wrap your head around it and know that there are certain things in life you can control and you can't control. I can't control that I don't speak the language and don't understand the societal and cultural issues that confront. But what you do is you have to then trust your decision-making and finding the right partners and the right people on the ground to give you the support and input that you need. The beauty is that many Germans speak English. And so when we meet with television executives, politicians, I'm able to communicate that with them on a certain level. And in many cases, you know, as well as I could communicate with anyone whose first language is English. But fundamentally, when it comes down to the political process and the legal papers and the arguments in court or the administrative hearings that happen in front of a government, those all happen in German. And that's where I probably feel the most helpless. But like I said before, we've got really, really good partners and friends who I trust there now, who are as passionate about the UFC as we are. And so I'm confident that if things come up, they're prepared to deal with them.
Now, you had a couple of people criticize the UFC 120 card in London before and as being not worthy of being a big event. Yet people still filled up the O2 to the brim. I mean, the arena was sold out. You had the same people, only from Germany, hardcore fans essentially, complaining about the UFC 122 card. Yet, again, you're gonna be looking at a full arena at Fight Night. Is there sort of a disconnect between the vocal minority online and UFC fans in general?
I mean, I guess you could say that, but I think it's actually a little more simple than that. I think it's, you know, the vocal minority is probably the most knowledgeable and passionate about the sport and likely has their fighter favorites, have their notions about what are good matchups. The same way anyone who watches soccer or football or basketball might, you know, hope to see a certain team and a certain matchup. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that there's somebody who doesn't like the fight, you know, when it's announced and they wanted something else and they're disappointed they didn't get a different matchup. But at the end of the day, you know, you can't argue with the fact that the main event in this fight is going to determine the one who fights for the next middleweight championship. You know, other than a championship fight itself, that's about as meaningful as it gets in the UFC. And for that to be the event that we bring to Germany, I think is another indication of our commitment to Europe and Germany with this event. Because, you know, let's face it, these events are easier to operate out of the U.S. We have a bigger staff to operate them out of the U.S. This is a huge commitment of time and money for us to run these internationally. And so, you know, we're not in the business of doing these things unless we think they're meaningful and important. And so the fans can rest assured that this is a meaningful and important fight, or we wouldn't be putting the energy into it.
Now, the other thing that needs to be said is that while UFC 122 may not have the Brock Lesnar's and Matt Hughes of this world that other events may have, but it's a solid card from top to bottom that's high on talent and promises several exciting fights. To me, it seems like UFC is trying to emphasize the variety of what MMA really is on this card over possibly having a drawing power of two mega big names with not much underneath. Is that an accurate observation?
You know, I think that when Joe puts these cards together, he is always looking to create the best matchups, whether it's the massive event in Las Vegas or a fight night in Tennessee or an international event. So he's always working with which fighters are available and which fighters will make the best matchup. And when you look at this fight card and you look at the matchups, you can see the prospect of some super exciting fights. I mean, for anyone that's ever watched a Super Bowl, albeit the last few have been pretty exciting, you know, there's usually so much buildup around the big event and it usually lets you down in some cases in other sports. But we're lucky because there are 11 fights on this card and our fans get there early. They'll see many of the fights, and if they don't like one, they're definitely going to like another. So, I mean, the fight with Dennis Seaver and Andre Winner is one that I can't wait to see that fight. And I can't imagine anyone who's a real UFC fan who doesn't look at that matchup and say, man, that's going to be some fireworks.
There's actually several others as well. I mean, even Alessio Sakara and Jorge Rivera promises to be a stand-up war. And the video that Rivera put out on the internet a couple of days ago, it's really run around like wildfire, where he was singing a cappella, different 80s German pop songs, like 99 Red Balloons and a lot of other ones. And it's catching on like wildfire, where he might actually become a crowd favorite for the event just based on that. So there's a certain groundswell, and you can feel with every passing day people getting more and more excited for the card.
Yeah, I think that's usually what we see, you know, and you know, we as a group work so hard, you know, I'm not afraid to admit that there are times during the process where everyone's, you know, just going balls out to get this thing built and done that you want to just take a breath. But the good news is as the fans get more excited and as there's more interest, we as a company get more excited and everyone is working harder and pulling harder to make sure it's a big success. So we kind of all need each other to make sure these things are successful.
Yeah, and this show also happens to be the most international lineup of fighters UFC has ever had on any card anywhere. Is that a tribute to UFC's tremendous international growth over the past 3 years?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Dana always talks about, you know, when the bomb goes off, it sort of spreads around and then people start to train and, you know, you get more and more talented fighters coming out. So, yeah, I think that's right on. This is definitely a testament to that. It's also a testament to Joe's, you know, ability to keep his finger on the pulse, to know which fighters are meaningful out there and to put together a fight card that has this kind of international breadth, because you know, these local heroes and markets are very important, you know, no matter what country you're in, to get the media that hasn't yet bought into the UFC. It gets them a reason to cover the event, and then over time those local heroes remain an important part, but at the end of the day everyone just wants to see the best fighters. So definitely this is a very international card for us. And I just can't say it enough. I'm really, really excited to get there and start drinking the little beers.
Or the big ones.
Or the big ones.
Now, obviously, UFC is a big hit in the UK and Ireland today. It's begun to win over a tough country like Germany. Interest in the UFC in France and Italy and many other European markets is high and on the rise every single day. With the limited amount of shows you can realistically run outside North America each year, how hard is it to establish a presence in all of these markets?
Well, I think what it is, you know, I guess to sum it up, you know, ideally you'd love to have more events in each of these countries, because you need to have some consistency to continue to work on the local media, give them a reason to write. So it's very important that, as you said, there's a real challenge because of the number of events that we commit to our U.S. partners, and all of the television deals we do around the world feed off of really what we're doing in the U.S. Now, we're working on changing that in the new year, and we're still making progress on that. But certainly if we're able to pull off some of these events without the need for U.S. television, you know, I think that it gives us the ability to be more consistent in these markets, to continue to you know, engage our fans and, you know, continue to grow the sport. And that's really what we're trying to do. Dana and Lorenzo's dream of making this the biggest sport in the world, that's only going to happen if we can continue to bring a lot of events to these outlying countries.
On the same token, with Mark Fisher now heading operations in Asia, when do you expect the first UFC to hit that region?
I don't know. You know, it's a good question. You know, there's a small chance it could be next year. I don't really know. You know, these things are so organic. I can tell you that he and I are scheduling time early this week, probably tomorrow or first thing Tuesday, to start looking at, you know, some prospects for different Asian cities and starting to put it together, sort of budgets and sort of the legal and political issues we have to focus on. So, you know, we're starting to work in that direction of getting some planning done, but I'd hate to give you a date or a commitment. Right. You know us too well, Oliver, that until it's signed, sealed, and delivered, we can't, but I can tell you we're working on it.
Cool. Now, especially India seems to be a barren land as far as sports go. You've got cricket, and that's literally where India's interest in sports currently ends. How big do you feel UFC's opportunity is to establish its own product as a strong number two in India?
I think we're very bullish about it. We came back after a couple-day trip there right after the London event, and we met with all of the top executives from TV to media in general to production, and to every person in those meetings, you know, the, what we heard was, as you said, cricket's number one. There's room for a number two here, and UFC couldn't be the, easily be the number two. So we've got a lot of balls in the air right now with India, and we're working very hard on trying to make something a reality there.
Now, before we let you go, as we approach 2011, what would you say are the three top things you'd like to get done next year?
Well, I think the a localized version of the Ultimate Fighter in a territory or two would be a big success if we can get that done next year. We are incubating probably four, maybe five different opportunities for the Ultimate Fighter in some of these other countries. That would be big. Another one would be to get at least one or two new events in new countries or territories next year. I think that would be massive. And then third, a little more general, is just getting more television out there. So resetting our Chinese TV landscape, getting that worked through, and reworking some of our deals in South America, I think will be great for us.
It looks like 2011 is going to be a good year for the UFC once again. Marshall, any final words for the fans over in Germany?
No, get ready for us. We're coming. Fighters all get into town Tuesday. You know, we've got the open weigh-in on Friday, and I think we, you know, the way the arena's set up, it's adjacent to, I think, one of the largest malls in Europe, so we're expecting a huge foot traffic at the weigh-in and for everyone to get a chance to see the fighters, and I can't wait, and I'm really excited, and I know all the whole team is.
Well, thank you so much for making time once again for us, and I definitely can't wait to get to Oberhausen and to see this fight card, definitely.
All right, we'll see you there. Thanks. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir, and you have a great evening.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Tough Talk. 100% MMA.